This is the Montana Outdoor Podcast, brought to you in part by Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, home of Boss Snowplows, CM Truck Beds, and Diamond C Trailers. Just go to rmtte.com for more information. And by Superior Hardwoods of Montana, home of the largest selection of in-stock high-end wood products and flooring in the western United States. Let them guide you through the woods at superior-hardwoods.com. Now, get ready for more fascinating topics and the most interesting people you will ever find in Montana's great outdoors. We offer new podcasts most every Saturday. You can get a link to these podcasts by going to our website, montanaoutdoor.com, or by going to our Facebook page, or just send an email to downrigger@montanaoutdoor.com and say, "Send a link to my email." It's that simple. Now let's head out with your host, Downrigger Dale, and see what's going on in Montana's great outdoors.
Thank you very much, Manny. And as Manny just said, I am Downrigger Dale, and we've got another Montana Outdoor Podcast going for you. Thank you all for joining us. Special shout out and thank you to our active military all around the world. So many of you listen to this podcast, and we are very honored to have you here. And as I always say, I hope we bring a little bit of home back to you as you're off protecting us and doing all the great things you do. So thank you for your service. Now, we've had some really interesting podcasts here of late. We had to do 2 weeks in a row of the salmon podcast that we did with Trevor and Kit Johnson, because you guys kind of blew up our site over that one. But a lot of you sent me emails about, hey, how did the walleye egg collection effort go on Fort Peck? Because that's really important to us walleye fishermen. Kind of gives us an idea of, you know, how things are going to go. So I thought, well, let's go straight to the expert there, Heath Headley, fisheries biologist extraordinary. He's been on the program with us many times here. Heath, welcome back to the podcast, and thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rigger.
Yeah. Hey, you know, the walleye collection effort, of course, is an important one there on Fort Peck. It goes beyond, you're not collecting eggs for future walleye just for Fort Peck. This goes to other areas, correct?
Well, so, yeah, the eggs that we collect on Fort Peck, they go to other water bodies, and that's just here in Montana, primarily the eastern part of the state, central part of the state. And yeah, so that's, you know, the sole source for walleye eggs here in Montana. That's, they originate, you know, from Fort Peck Reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do collect a few northern pike eggs occasionally as well to meet stocking requirements. But yeah, no, we primarily focus on walleye.
Mm-hmm. Well, he said, so last time you had started out on the show, we have had, I mean, this podcast has grown a great deal. And of course, we're very happy to see that. So I thought maybe you could give us just a little background on yourself and all that, just for so many of our new listeners who may not be familiar with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into doing fish biology.
Sure, you bet. So I grew up in Northeast South Dakota, kind of between Aberdeen, Watertown area, Glacial Lakes region, pretty neat, unique area, a lot of sloughs, potholes and lakes. And I guess, I mean, from early on, you know, I was exposed to hunting and fishing. And, my grandpa, you know, we spent a lot of time together. You know, he actually took me fishing quite a bit. And so that was always a good experience that I had and always interested me. You know, we fish for a lot of different species, primarily perch, pike, and walleye in that area. And, you know, there were some other species that we tried to catch too, but those were the big ones. And I think really that kind of set the stage for, you know, I guess my interest in fishing and fisheries and, you know, just wanted to learn, you know, more about why fish do what they do. And, you know, and that kind of led me down the path of going to college, you know, undergraduate school, South Dakota State University, and then getting some summer jobs, you know, in that Northeast area, you know, learning about the fisheries there and how things, you know, worked the way they did. And then I, you know, after that, I actually went out to Wyoming, spent a little bit of time there, seasonal fish work as well. And then actually went to graduate school in Indiana in Ball State. And I worked up on Southern Lake Michigan looking at, you know, the yellow perch population dynamics up there. And then once I finished there, I ended up, I got a full-time position out here in Montana. I wanted to, you know, get closer back to the Dakotas and further west, just recognize some pretty unique fishing opportunities and whatnot in the area. And yeah, I've been with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks since 2006.
Well, we're glad that you're here because you've always been such a great source of information for us. You know, we're going to cover a lot of different things, mostly going to concentrate on walleye here in this podcast. But before we get into how the egg collection effort went and all that, I wanted to get a little history here. And I'll often get emails of people saying, you know, I really think that walleye are native to Montana. And others go, no, I've looked at research. No, it's not. So I thought, well, let's see what your thoughts are on this. Now, if you look at the Montana Field Guide, and they didn't really help out too much here because the and I'll read it, quote it here. It says, there are conflicting ideas among experts as to whether the walleye is native to Montana or not. Regardless, it is one of the most important sport fishes in Montana, in the eastern drainage and elsewhere in the U.S. and in Canada, where the walleye is a much sought-after commercial fish as well. So where do you stand on that as far as is the walleye a native fish to Montana?
So, yeah, you know, I mean, we're going to have to go back to science and, you know, science, you know, kind of says no. Mm. But, you know, the one thing that, you know, you kind of pointed out, Rigger, is it's regardless, you know, whether or not they are or aren't. You know, we, you know, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, you know, manages, you know, walleye water bodies here in eastern and central Montana, and, you know, put quite a bit of effort into monitoring these walleye populations on an annual basis, collecting data, you know, seeing how they're growing, seeing if they're surviving, you know, and, you know, like we're going to talk about, you know, stocking efforts. You know, we invest a good amount of time and effort and manpower into going out, collecting eggs, and then hopefully having, you know, enough fry and fingerlings down the road to stock these other water bodies. So, you know, anglers have the opportunity to go out there and, you know, have some good fishing success, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of stocking, one thing I did is I tried to do a little research to find out when stocking of walleye first got started in Montana. And I found two different answers to that. One said it was 1922. The other said 1933. Do you have any idea when the stocking of walleye in Montana waters started, Heath?
Yeah, that's kind of along the lines from, you know, what we have based on historic records. You know, I would probably lean a little bit more towards the 30s, though, as, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit more, I guess, solid information, better records, that sort of thing. And then, you know, really in the 50s, that's kind of when things got going a little bit more, you know, interest, you know, I guess maybe peaked a little bit. And, you know, and actually in 1951, that's when walleye were first stocked, you know, by FWP in the Fort Peck Reservoir.
Okay. In 51.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Well, regardless, as you mentioned, they're here now and they are extremely popular. In fact, when you guys do the egg collection there in Fort Peck, you know, we will always post, you know, your progress because you guys on your Facebook page are always doing little articles about how many you got so far and that. And so we'll repost it on MontanaOutdoor.com. And those are some of the most read articles that we post. So obviously we know this is something that is very much important to people. When did that egg collection effort start in Fort Peck?
So it actually started back in 1986.
Oh,
okay. And yeah. And so it's been going for, you know, a long time. And, and actually around that same time, they were actually trap netting and trying to collect eggs from walleye from several other locations like Cooney, Tongue River Reservoir, Yellowstone River down around Intake. Just some ones that I know off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. And just to, you know, again, that's, you know, this 80s period, that's when walleye interest really started to kind of take hold, you know. And so, therefore, there was a kind of an interest and a demand, you know, hopefully to provide some opportunities out there by, you know, hopefully supplemental stocking. And, you know, really what it boiled down to is, you know, what they learned was that, you know, Fort Peck was a pretty good, pretty reliable source for, you know, numbers of fish and good sized fish and egg quality. And, you know, that's kind of where it went from there, really.
Mm-hmm. So, that kind of brings us up to today. And how did the walleye collection end up this year? And if you've got some numbers there, maybe, show how it compares to last year and previous years.
Sure. Well, it went pretty well. We got started out at a more normal time this year than we did last year. You know, I think probably some of the listeners recall the, you know, one of the later ice cover periods on record, you know, for Fort Peck. I mean, we didn't get out there last year until like the very end of April and a couple days in May. You know, we still ended up doing okay. And like last year we collected 67 million eggs, I think, in a very short amount of time.
Right. Yeah.
But it was very condensed. Those fish, walleyes were like, you know, every fish that we handled was kind of in walleye spawning mode and it didn't take us long. This year, like I said, a little more normal. We started around April 10th, I believe, somewhere in there, shortly after ice was gone, and you know, got our gear set up, trap nets out, you know, trying to find, you know, hopefully actively spawning fish. And, man, we did hit a little bump in the road. We had some windy conditions and some cold temperatures. Matter of fact, I was kind of looking back through some of my water temperature stuff, and we had that one day, like it was Saturday, I remember coming to work and looking over, you know, some of the little impoundments and whatnot, and I saw ice on the cover of them, and I'm just like, oh man, this isn't going to be good. And sure enough, yeah, I mean, we had water temperatures, you know, checking our nets, like it was 38 degrees, and we were seeing some walleye right up before that, Dale, you know, kind of in good numbers, and you know, females releasing their eggs, we call them ripe. But yeah, that we hit that cold snap, it really shut things down for about two, almost 3 days, and weren't catching walleye. But thankfully, the temperatures warmed back up and the fish responded accordingly, moved back in. And when it was all said and done, we ended up with just over 80 million eggs. So
oh, wow.
We did well. Yeah. We did collect a few more eggs. Typically, we kind of want to get around 60 million eggs total. You know, that kind of covers all our bases in terms of fry stocking, fingerlings, and fry that go into the ponds, you know, at the hatcheries. So, yeah, no, it went well, thankfully, other than just a little hiccup. But it was all good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and most of the walleye fishermen in Montana know that this egg collection effort goes on because, like I say, they really watch our website and your website carefully to see how it's going. But I think a lot of them may not know actually how the process is done. Can take us through what that is like, the actual collection of it. You've got these trap nets. Maybe you can explain what that is and then just talk about how you end up getting those eggs.
Sure. Yeah. So like you mentioned, we have trap nets. They have what we call a lead line. It runs from the shore out to a series of frames and hoops. And basically when these walleye are coming in shallow to spawn, you know, look for other fish, look for rock gravel areas. They're cruising the shoreline pretty shallow. They hit that lead line and it follows them right out to a series of cones, you know, essentially like a big minnow trap where they can get in, but they have a very difficult time of getting back out. And so we, you know, we set those nets out. You know, typically we're trying to find warmer or ideal water temperature conditions, which is, you know, 45 to around 50 degrees. That's where they like to be. And we check the nets every day, you know, minus windy days where we can't get out there, but check them every day, sort through what we have for walleyes. Basically, there's ripe walleyes, which are females that are releasing their eggs, and green ones that we call them green, ones that are holding on to their eggs. And then, of course, the male walleye. And so we sort them all off. We do hold the green female walleyes for up to 4 days. We have some holding pens, and just to see if they'll ripen up, you know, if temperatures warm up, you know, they might start to do the same and start to release their eggs. If not, we just let them go. But yeah, so we collect the males down there as well. The whole egg fertilization process actually takes place down there on the water in the big dry arm area. So we strip the eggs down there, add the milt, add the sperm, they get fertilized. We do go and add a solution called diatomaceous earth, which it keeps the eggs from clumping together. Because out in the wild, they're, you know, naturally sticking to rock and gravel until they hatch out. But since they're going to the hatcheries, you know, we want to try and eliminate bunching or clumping together. They go in incubation jars and you want them all nice and individual. Sometimes if they clump together, you can get bacteria, fungus develop inside and basically end up losing a lot of your eggs, resulting in mortality. And, you know, we don't want that. So yeah, they get placed in that diatomaceous earth solution. They get rinsed off and then water hardened for a period of 1 hour. And that actually firms the eggshell up and allows them to be transported to the hatchery. They're pretty fragile during those initial stages, you know, where the fertilization process is occurring. And yeah, then they head straight to the Miles City and Fort Peck hatcheries from there.
And both the male and female walleye, they live through that process, right?
Oh yeah, yep. We you know, as soon as the female walleye eggs get stripped, we have netters, and I will say, and some people probably know, we have volunteers, you know, that help us on this project, because there's a lot of fish and a lot of different processes going on. Yeah, no, they'll take that female walleye, you know, get it into a net once the eggs get stripped from one of the fish culturists, and then released right there, you know, at our barge site.
Yeah, and then off they go, and then you probably see them the next year. So now you've got all these 80 million eggs or so. So out of those, how many will actually make it to being released back into the water once they hatch?
Okay. So, you know, typically we can kind of expect to see around, you know, 50%, you know, hatching success or eye up, you know, and so that's just basically, you know, getting to the fry portion of it. You know, and I will say, the fry portion, it's pretty unique and pretty interesting. Once those walleye hatch out, you know, they have about 2 to 4 days to get on zooplankton. Otherwise they'll end up dying. So it's really critical once those fish hatch out and they get monitored, you know, to either go, directly into a water body, you know, such as Fort Peck or somewhere else that, you know, has a request for walleye fry, or go into the rearing ponds at Fort Peck in Miles City to be, you know, stocked as fingerlings, you know, a little bit later on.
Okay. So you'll take out of that, say, $40 million that's now, you know, went and hatched, then you're going to take some percentage of just the brand new hatch fish, and they go right back in the water, and then some that you're going to continue to rear out and grow, and then move to different waterways. Okay.
Yep. And that's, and then even, and then again, kind of go into that next step. Then sometimes, you know, you see about another, again, you know, 50% survival, you know, from that fry to that fingerling stage, you know, and it can vary. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing, you know, like the hatchery personnel do a really good job of keeping tabs on. Cause you know, if you leave them in those ponds too long, you know, when they get up to about an inch and a half in size, they will actually start cannibalizing on one another, because they develop really good working mouth parts. They have, you know, very small teeth at that time. And, you know, they'll start to look for other fish. So, yeah, you might get bigger walleye, but you're not going to have as many of them. So it's a real careful balancing act that, you know, those guys, you know, keep tabs on.
Wow. Okay. So out of the little guys that just hatch and get into the water, do you have an estimate of how many of those would actually survive out in the wild? Because I imagine there's lots of other critters in the reservoir that eat those right up.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely a scary environment out there for probably, you know, a new small fish that's released. And it's not just other predators too. You know, the other thing that goes into determining their survival is habitat and food. Mm-hmm. You know, so water levels play a, you know, kind of a important role and that sort of thing. But we did actually, look at doing some research and looked at a, you know, way of trying to determine, you know, what kind of contribution we did see from like our fingerlings that we stock out in Fort Peck, along with some of the natural reproduction that occurs out there as well. And it was actually pretty neat in the fact that it was kind of over, let's see, 9 years, basically from like 2005 to 2013, where we looked at, you know, again, survival, but it just happened to coincide with, you know, huge fluctuations in reservoir elevations, basically low periods to all time high. And what we saw was, as far as fingerling contribution during the low water years, you know, when there wasn't a lot of spawning habitat out there, they weren't able to get into certain tributaries. Hatchery contribution was, you know, of fingerlings, that is, like upwards of close to 50%. So pretty impressive, you know, for that particular year class. But when we saw reservoir elevations start to increase, greater amount of spawning habitat out there, those fish natural reproduction started to occur more frequently. And so like 2011, I think, you know, it was only like 18% contribution of hatchery reared fingerlings, you know, for that particular year. Yeah. And so, you know, just kind of the other take home message, I guess, is it varies quite a bit from year to year. You know, and this is specifically on Fort Peck, you know, but it can probably be, you know, applied to a few other water bodies as well. And, you know, that's why we don't see, you know, strong year classes year after year. But at least in the case of Fort Peck, you know, there's always some year classes that are swimming around out there, whether it be a contribution of, you know, stocking efforts or natural reproduction.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, maybe you can talk a bit about how much, if you know, and I may be asking some stuff that's pretty hard to know, but as far as how many of those walleye that are in, let's say, we'll say Fort Peck, are naturally just born right there in the water, and how many come from the hatchery or from your guys' effort. So we're going to talk about that right after this here on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer are proud authorized dealers of some of the most highly revered brands in the world, like Boss Snowplows, CM Truck Beds, and Diamond C Trailers. Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer has an unparalleled selection of cargo, utility, and dump trailers, and they still have a good selection of Boss snowplows as well. But the gang at Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer knows that it takes much more than filling a lot with great inventory to be a company that folks can depend on. That's why they vowed to become the true experts in everything they sell. That's why they set their goals high, and I mean high. They can and will help you before the sale by finding you what you need to get the job that is in front of you done. Whether it is a new CM truck bed for the back of your truck, or the perfect Boss snowplow for the front of it. Or maybe you need the Diamond C dump trailer to finally tackle that mess behind the barn you vowed you would get done once the snow cleared. The folks at Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer will not only find the perfect equipment to get those and about any other job done, they'll help you with financing, teach you everything you need to know about how to use that equipment, and will continue to be there for you when you need parts or full service. Bottom line is this: Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer is your locally owned Boss snowplow, CM truck bed, and Diamond C dealer. They offer a wide variety of auto, truck, and trailer accessories and specialize in sales and service of trailers. Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer is located at 5680 Expressway. That's right in Missoula, Montana. You can also go see them on the web. That's rmtte.com. Sure, they'd love it if you came by, but feel free to find them whichever way you want. Just remember, when something needs to be hauled somewhere, there's no better place to start than Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer. That's rmtte.com. Go see them.
And we are back here on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. I'm Downrigger Dale, along with my guest, Heath Headley, a biologist with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And just got done doing the big egg collection effort on Fort Peck. And about 80 million were taken. So now we're talking a bit about what happens once these fish are either in the water or how many are actually produced naturally. So do you have any idea as far as how many walleye, and let's just use Fort Peck for example, how many are just born naturally in Fort Peck and how many are actually introduced into Fort Peck or stocked, shall we say?
Yeah, so as far as an exact number, no, but like I mentioned earlier, you know, based on that percentage, it's more of a percentage than anything, you know, in terms of our contributions. Does that make sense, Dale?
Yeah. So it's really just based on, you know, what you guys put in into the water, and then the rest is just whatever Mama Nature allows to have to happen. Is Fort Peck considered a good breeding ground for walleye? I mean, obviously that wasn't their natural habitat, or is it very much dependent upon the efforts of FWP?
It goes both ways. And like I mentioned, you know, water levels and forage conditions and spawning habitat all play a real important role. You know, and in some years, natural reproduction can be phenomenal, really. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we did learn, you know, from that study was actually otoliths microchemistry, is that, Fort Peck, at least walleye are spawning in different parts of the reservoir. You know, it's not, you know, one location. And that's right. That's a good thing, to have different options out there in case, you know, one particular area, you know, based on food and habitat isn't doing so good versus another, you know, having that plan B, if you will. And then, you know, combine that with, you know, our stocking efforts. And, you know, that obviously helps out a bunch as well. Mm-hmm. But what we saw was, you know, like the Missouri River and upper portion of Fort Peck Reservoir, that is pretty, pretty good and pretty consistent in terms of, you know, natural reproduction up in that end rigger. And as a matter of fact, we don't stock any fish up in there because we don't want to be putting, you know, stocked fish that are, you know, on top of fish that are already naturally reproducing. You know, we want to make sure they all have plenty of room, plenty of food, to grow and to survive successfully. You know, and then, like I said, the big dry arm, you know, that was identified as a pretty important spawning area. And again, when reservoir conditions allow, you know, typically are a little bit higher and they can actually go up into some of the tributaries, they can be really successful as well.
Okay. And as far as, you know, we mentioned earlier, there are some that some of these eggs are going into the Fort Peck hatchery. Some are going to Miles City. Then when it's the reservoir gets stocked, is there's more than just Fort Peck that gets stocked with walleye. What other water bodies are getting stocked from what you collect?
Yeah, so there's like, I think last I looked, there's around 20 other water bodies here in the state of Montana. Yeah. And I can't remember all of them off the top of my head, but I know, like, you know, at least over in our area, Region 6, you know, we have like Nelson Reservoir, Fresno, you know, a couple other smaller areas, impoundments. But actually, people interested, they can go on our FWP website and look at, you know, our stocking plans and what's slated for the next upcoming years. And it'll have, you know, by walleye, by location, you know, what's planned on being stocked.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So what would you say, and I know this is probably a tough one, but if you had to rank the health of walleye in Montana and primarily the area that you know, in Region 6 there, would you say that the walleye population is pretty healthy? I mean, let's say 1 to 10, is it a 7 or an 8, or what would you say?
I would say it currently, thankfully, right up, you know, we're right up there at the top right now, rigger. The walleye population, based on some of our netting data, is, you know, above long-term average, you know, over the course of about 30-year sampling period. And it's really comprised of a large, you know, diverse age group. So we have fish, you know, essentially from 1 year old all the way up to 20 years old. And as you can imagine, all different sort of sizes in between. So that's always really good and reassuring, you know, to see that in sampling efforts. And then in addition, the forage that's out there too is really good. Our Cisco numbers have been really strong the last, well, actually close to a decade now. And we are seeing some shoreline forage like yellow perch, spot-tail shiners, crappies, things that the small walleye really rely on for their growth and survival as well. So yeah, things, you know, currently look really good out here in Fort Peck.
Okay. Yeah, because what we have seen, you know, I don't know if you saw the numbers from the Tough Guy tournament over there in Hell Creek, but I mean, that was just phenomenal. I mean, you're talking, you know, 60 pounds over that did that. And I had heard from, you know, everybody gets theories and all this of saying, well, okay, that's because there's a certain class of walleye that have really dominated. So we're getting a little spoiled, but that's going to be gone. And then we're going to see sizes going down. What do you say on that?
Yeah, theory? No, that is a, you know, definitely logical and biological, you know, safe bet to say, you know, this, you know, that particular year class, it actually goes back to what we learned in that, you know, stocking natural reproduction study from 2011. And yeah, those fish, you know, are averaging close to 30 inches and some a little bit more. And there's actually, you know, a few older ones out there as well. There's a 2008 year class even swimming around out there. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty gosh darn good right at the moment. And the one thing though that I will say is we have a lot of young fish too in the system rigger, and that's always encouraging because, you know, we want something to replace these fish down the road.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
will it ever be as big as this 2011 year class? Probably not, but I will say there's some really strong numbers of, like, you know, 16-inch, 17-inch fish out there right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know some have said, well, you know, to keep these fish around, maybe we ought to look at a slot limit or, you know, for during tournament time, because we do see a lot of walleye tournaments on Fort Peck. Is that something we need to concern ourselves with in changing what we're allowed to keep in that, or are we pretty sound?
No, we're really sound, and it's a good question. You know, we're concerned about those fish, you know, just like everybody else, and it's something that we evaluate on an annual basis, you know, with, you know, our monitoring netting surveys, you know, and then looking at our age and growth information, and then also creel surveys, you know, and we see, you know, even though we've seen, yeah, some, you know, a fair amount of tournaments and increased angling pressure, but you also need to have, in conjunction with that, high harvest, you know, and we just haven't seen that. You know, we've, even our catch rates, they're not, you know, super high. They're just kind of right where they need to be. So that's
okay.
You know, that's telling us that, you know, harvest, you know, and mortality isn't, you know, a huge issue. And again, you know, look at that 2011 year class. They've been in the system for quite a while. So, you know, it's telling us, you know, from our monitoring sampling efforts that growth is good, habitat is good, and mortality is really low, you know, and again, going back to your initial question of looking at some form of a length regulation, you know, it's, you know, we started looking at it, you know, several plus years ago, really, you know, when everybody was concerned, which rightfully so, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and things are still going pretty gosh darn well.
Well, now that's good news. That's really good news. You know, I know that some people, you know, some walleye anglers will say, now when you catch those big females, which, you know, any of the fish that are, you know, 30 inch plus are probably female. There are a lot of anglers that'll say, you know, throw that back, get a good picture, get, you know, measure it, do what you got to do, but then get that fish back in the water. Is that something that you guys feel strongly about as well? What's your thoughts there? Because I know some guys say, hey, I want to keep this fish.
Sure.
What are your thoughts there?
Sure. Yeah, no, and it's, you know, there's no right or wrong answer. And it's good that, you know, people want to release those fish. And, you know, again, just one thing I will say about releasing fish is, you know, just try and minimize handling as much as possible. If you want to make sure it's, you know, a good release and hopefully survival is good as well. But then, you know, if somebody, you know, gets that fish of a lifetime, you know, there's no biological justification that says, you know, they can't get that fish mounted if they really want to.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, by and large, from what I've seen, you know, fishermen, not just in Fort Peck, but around the state, I think they have a pretty good feel that, you know, it's up to us to do the right thing. And so I think we're pretty fortunate that most of our fishermen are pretty responsible out there, don't you think?
Yes. Yep. And, you know, even based on, you know, some of our creel surveys and talking with anglers, you know, out there, again, which is, you know, kind of an important, you know, they definitely, you know, release fish at times, you know, from time to time. So, yeah, you know, that just kind of supports a little bit of, you know, what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk a bit about how popular the walleye is. And I guess when you're like me or the captain or others that, you know, we just love going after these fish. They're a lot of fun to catch. And of course they're incredible eating fish. Where would you say the walleye is on the fish popularity scale? I tried to do a little research on this, and I couldn't find a lot of data on that. Do you have any data that shows what's the most popular fish to catch in Montana, and where would the walleye rank in that?
Yeah, so actually, we just got some information here, I think within the last year, and it comes from like our statewide fishing pressure estimate surveys. They do it every other year. But, you know, maybe no big surprise, but trout is right up there. They're number one, you know, okay. Rainbows. Mm-hmm. But then walleye are right behind them, you know. And so there's, like you said, a lot of, you know, definitely interest and some pretty neat walleye fisheries, really, when, you know, it comes right down to it that Montana has, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're awful lucky that, you know, one, we have so many different fish that we can target and fish for. In fact, that's one of the things I've been doing on my Outfitter series is I've been on the podcast. We just had Kit and Trevor Johnson on, but coming up here soon, we're going to have other outfitters on as well, and they're going to feature and talk about species and that. And that's one of the things that I just thought people might be interested in is we tend to get where we know where the fish is, we know what's good fishing in this body of water, so we tend to stick with that because if we want to drive, you know, across the state, well, gee, I don't know if that's worth my time. I don't know that lake or that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that we're trying to say is, hey, hire an outfitter for a day, learn that body of water, and now you got another place yet to go and learn about some of these different species. And so, you know, to me, I just think we're so fortunate that we have this incredible fishery out there. And of course, walleye being one that has done so well in Montana. Are there any plans, do you know, as far as introducing walleye into other water bodies? Or are we pretty well set? This is the way it is.
Yeah, I couldn't speak for anything beyond, you know, the way it is right now. And again, you know, I'm only a small piece of the walleye puzzle, you know, and I'm just out here on Fort Peck, Rigger. So, yeah, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, be interesting to see. But for now, there certainly seems to be plenty of walleye to go to go around.
Right.
I think we're safe there. Do you have any thoughts or theories of why you think the walleye has become so popular in Montana? Because I would say walleye was probably not the number two as far as popular fish in Montana. I mean, that's got to be a fairly recent thing. Do you know why it got so popular?
I mean, I think for just kind of a couple of reasons that we, you know, briefly touched on. I mean, there's some pretty nice walleye fisheries here in the state, and we're pretty fortunate to have. And you know, some of them, you know, are very capable of producing some good sized walleye. And I think that's always on people's radar. You know, they want to catch that, you know, hopefully big walleye. They're definitely in some very, you know, unique and beautiful places, no doubt about it. You know, everything from the, you know, out here in the plains, you know, and the reservoirs, the rivers, you know, to further west, you know, or central Montana, I should say. You know, and those systems out there. And then, yeah, like you mentioned, you know, obviously, you know, table fare, that's a big one. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a number of factors, I think, really.
What would you say is the most sought after body of water for walleye? Is there one lake that from your creel studies and that tends to be more popular for fishing for walleye than others in the state?
Well, I mean, Fort Peck ranks right up there. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just kind of the big one and, you know, kind of the go-to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard, you know, and I don't know where these, like, in fishermen and some of these fishing magazines that I like to read, one had said that they estimate that Fort Peck is the fifth ranked number five in the world as far as walleye goes. Would you agree with that? Or I again, I don't know where they get that, you know, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell you as far as an exact number, I guess, Dale, but it's definitely on people's radar. You know, there's no doubt about that, especially the last, you know, several years with, you know, social media and people, you know, seeing what's been going on, you know, with some of the tournament stuff and whatnot, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is the biggest predator for walleye besides fishermen? I mean, in Fort Peck, what eats walleye?
I mean, the one thing I can say, and it's not just Fort Peck and it's not just walleye. I mean, it's unfortunately the crazy and humbling experience that we live in is that all fish eat all fish. You know, there's no real right or wrong answer or no, I don't know, smoking gun to point at one particular species. But,
Yeah, I've always wondered that is, you know, when you pull in a 30 incher of walleye, you know, I always thought, well, this guy's probably pretty safe for the rest of his days or her days. Is that true? Or is there something else that would eat a 30 inch walleye?
No, it would be pretty challenging at that point in time.
Yeah. If you're smaller, then you need to worry a lot. Now, you mentioned like perch and the Cisco are, you know, some of the main things that walleye will go after in Fort Peck. Do you guys have any other ideas as far as other things that the walleye are eating out there?
Yeah, those are the primary ones, but they will eat, like I say, some crappie when they're really young. And actually we see that more in the western part of the reservoir where we typically have a little bit higher crappie numbers. You know, they will eat some spot-tail shiners and emerald shiners as well. And then we'll even see like a freshwater drum in some of the stomach contents as well. Yeah.
Okay.
And even some shorthead red horse. That is another food item from time to time as well.
And what was the name of that one?
Shorthead red horse.
Shorthead red horse. Okay. Now that one's a new one to me.
Yep. They're basically a sucker species and they're native to Montana. Yeah. Pretty neat fish really.
Huh. Okay. So that's gives us a little idea of what our walleye are feeding on and going after. Do you have any thoughts as far as, how I could become a better walleye fisherman? You think about that for a minute. We're going to take another quick break here and think about one. We fished together a few times. If you got any suggestions, but maybe on the more broader thing of any suggestions you might have for fishermen as far as what they ought to do if they're really trying to target walleye. We'll talk about that, and I'll put you on the spot a little. You got to help me out here. I got to start catching bigger walleye. We'll do that right after this. I want to talk a bit about a very special company located in western Montana, Superior Hardwoods of Montana. They were established in 1977, and since that time, guiding customers through the woods has been their passion throughout their history. The main focus at Superior Hardwoods of Montana has been to provide the finest wide plank flooring and unique building materials available anywhere. One of the things I noticed right away about the owner of Superior Hardwoods of Montana, John Medlager, and his son Corey, and the rest of the staff there is they're very proud to offer the largest selection of in-stock flooring in the western United States. See, for over 40 years, they've been known for leading the industry in reclaimed and antique building materials, and the success that followed has allowed them to, now get this, stock over 11 acres of stunning architectural lumber that awaits the perfect addition to your home. One thing I want you to remember is, just because they're located in Missoula, Montana, that does not mean they can't help you turn your home into a piece of historical art if you live somewhere else. They have been guiding folks from as far away as Hawaii and beyond through the woods for many years. So no matter if your project is located across the street from them, across the state, or somewhere else in the world, they can't wait to turn your house into a dream home. Their goal is simple. They stand ready to deliver the best choices with reliability and honesty, helping at any phase of a project with inspirational advice. And I'm not exaggerating when I say they actually treat their customers as friends and family. So, the choice is yours. But if I were you, I would go to superior-hardwoods.com. Superior-hardwoods.com. Of course, you're more than welcome to call them, 406-235-7452. Or, yeah, they'd love you to visit 5120 Highway 93, just south of Missoula, Montana. They can't wait to guide you through the woods at Superior Hardwoods of Montana. Go see them. You're going to love what they do to your home. We are back here on the Montana Outdoor Podcast. My guest is Heath Headley, a biologist. And now I'm really putting him on the spot here because I want to know, Heath, what am I doing wrong? How do I catch that big state record that I've been out there looking for?
Oh, boy. Well, patience. Patience is always key when it comes to fishing. But yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's kind of talk to other anglers, you know, what they're doing, you know, that always helps with, you know, some tactics and locations. And one thing that I can say, and we've seen this with like some of our creel survey information, you know, there's definitely times of year, when walleye catching is, you know, at its peak, if you will, on Fort Peck. And for at least what we see on Fort Peck, that's, you know, around the months of, kind of end of June, getting into July, but then it tapers off. And a lot of that has to do with the forage that's out there too. But, you know, those are kind of a couple things that I can maybe help you out with a little bit, or at least information wise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's good info to have. And I will say that, I'm a work in progress, but by golly, me and the captain, we fish together a lot and, well, pretty much all the time. So, that might be part of my problem. I just need to get a better partner. I don't know.
I wasn't going to say anything there. So I'm going to leave that discussion up to you guys.
So as a fisheries biologist for FWP, how often do you get to actually go fishing? Because, you know, you're constantly having to do all these things like the big, you know, walleye collection effort and all that, the egg collection effort. Do you actually just get a chance to get out and fish much?
I do, but you know, as like everybody else, it's tough to juggle you know, work and family and all that other stuff. But boy, absolutely, whenever I get the chance and can find that window of opportunity, yes, I'm usually out there, you know, fishing for, you know, walleye or, you know, whatever species, really. You know, I'm like to fish for all sorts of fish, and no, it's just good to be out there. And then, you know, in addition to that, you know, I can, you know, I enjoy talking to other anglers and other fishermen, you know, just kind of seeing what they have to say and, you know, comparing notes and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one thing, you know, folks, when you see Heath out there and that, you know, stop and say hi and let them know your thoughts, because that's especially when the FWP is asking for input on different things in those creel surveys, that's really important that fishermen give that input. That you guys rely on that quite often, don't you?
You bet we do. And I, you know, from, you know, and I like to thank all the anglers who have participated, you know, we had one last year and then years prior, but no, thank you. I mean, it's a huge help, you know, gives us an idea of what's going on out there. And it helps in making, you know, management decisions too. And, you know, what we should do moving down the road.
Mm-hmm. Well, I encourage all you, walleye fishermen out there, and just all fishermen in general to really respond to these things, because that helps the FWP a lot and they do rely on it. So that's important. Anything else you want to talk about? One thing I did want to bring up is, I'm hoping that you'll be able to join us down the road here and talk a bit about the Chinook salmon, and, you know, won't be long. We're going to be starting to focus on that as we get into later in July and in August. And that any sneak peek as far as what you think the salmon season's going to look like?
Oh, I'm going to maybe just hold on to that until we talk more in July.
Very good.
I'm looking forward to, covering some Chinook salmon stuff on Fort Peck for sure.
Yeah. So you guys stay tuned to the Montana Outdoor Podcast, and we'll get Heath on and we'll talk about these Chinook salmon, which have become incredibly popular as well. So, well, Heath, I want to thank you for your time and for be sure and pass on to everybody there in the hatchery and all that on all the hard work you guys do, because this was another great egg collection effort. 80 million is a heck of a good number. Let's pat you guys on the back a little, because as fishermen, we depend on it a lot. So thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it as well.
All right, Heath. Well, we look forward to having you back on here very soon when we'll get the salmon stuff and give you a little information on chasing these big Chinook salmon around, which is always fun. But until then, folks, when you look on the podcast description, I'll put some links in there so you can get a link to that article that talks a bit about the egg collection effort and that. And then, do you mind if folks contact you via email at all, Heath?
Nope, that's perfectly fine. Okay. Yeah, my email address is hheadley@mt.gov.
And I'll put that in the podcast description there, and you'll just be able to click on that, and it'll open up your email program, and you'll be able to send Heath an email right there. And that way you don't have to try to remember it. It'll just be right there. Click on it, and off you go. So we'll put that in there too. Until then, Heath, thanks so much for coming on and being part of the Montana Outdoor Podcast.
You bet. Thanks again for having me.
Well, there you have it, folks. That'll get you up to date on the mighty walleye and what he and she are doing out in the waterways and that. But from what we just heard, it looks pretty dang good. Can't wait to see all of your pictures out there. Be sure and send them. My email link is right there in the podcast description. Plus, Manny will give you my email here in just a second. And send me your pictures. We'd love to post them on MontanaOutdoor.com. And be sure and share this podcast with your friends and neighbors. We love to get the word out and let people know about all the information we talk about here. Until then, be safe out there. Be good to each other. And we'll see you next time here on the Montana Outdoor Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Montana Outdoor Podcast. It has been brought to you in part by Superior Hardwoods of Montana, home of the largest selection of in-stock high-end wood products and flooring in the Western United States. Let them guide you through the woods at superior-hardwoods.com. And by Rocky Mountain Truck and Trailer in Missoula, home of Boss Snowplows, CM Truck Beds, and Diamond Sea Trailers. Just go to rmtte.com for more information. So what did you think of today's podcast? Send your questions and comments to downrigger@montanaoutdoor.com. We should be dropping a new podcast this next Saturday. Until then, we will see you soon out in Montana's great outdoors.